Mark My Words shares Mark Homer's contrarian views on investing, business, finance, economics, and all things money. Mark interviews the world's most successful business, finance, and money experts, as well as imparting his knowledge in a factual, direct, and no-nonsense manner. Welcome to Mark My Words, and here is your host, Mark Homer.
Hello, and welcome to Mark My Words. So I'm just going to do a roundup of a few news stories that relate to property, investment, business, and also a little bit of a sort of budget musing that I'm going to go through now. So first of all, the budget. We saw the stuff about national insurance and 2% cut and NI cut from 8 to 6. I think this is sort of tinkering around the edges. I'm not sure it's going to make a massive amount of difference. The first change of note was the abolishing of multiple dwellings relief in relation to stamp duty. So we used to be able to, if you've got, say, a block of flats, or maybe you were buying a whole row of houses, you used to be able to take the average value of the property you were buying, and that would just fit into a certain band of stamp duty. That has been removed. A lot of the time when I was purchasing in that way, I would actually opt for commercial rate of stamp duty anyway. And I suppose, actually, was I buying blocks of flats? No, I was buying commercial buildings to develop into blocks of flats. But it doesn't suddenly mean that because you're buying a block of flats or lots of houses and the overall value is, you know, say 3 million, you've suddenly got to pay 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% stamp duty, as you would if you bought a house of, say, 10 million. Because you can opt for the commercial rates of stamp duty. So there are lots of different bands, you know, if you're buying a commercial building, but often you'll get it into the 3, 4, 5% range rather than sort of anywhere up to 10% if it was just on the normal residential rate. So I'm not sure this is as big a change as some are stating. I think most of us, or a lot of us, were using the commercial regime anyway. Interestingly, they've reduced the capital gains tax rate on residential properties from 28% to 24%. Maybe that is to encourage landlords to sell. Maybe single landlords, they're not so keen on anymore, Section 24, etc. Maybe encourage more of them to sell to first-time buyers or to people getting on the first rung or early rung of the property ladder. Again, is it going to make that much difference? Probably not. The Chancellor says he's going to raise more money through this because many of you will know the Laffer curve. As you reduce tax rates, often the amount of tax that you take increases. Sounds a little bit strange and maybe politically not that popular to the masses, but that's the reality with lots and lots of taxes. For the threshold has gone up to 90,000. Well, needed to do that a long time ago. Inflation tells us that. Definitely of interest is this new British ISA or ISA, new ISA allowance of £5,000 that relates to shares which you buy in British companies. I always invest my ISA every year. This is another £5,000 on top of the normal 20. And I think the money has got to go into British companies, so British equities. Can't see how that's a bad thing. Our stock market has been languishing, not performing for a long, long time now. You know, the international markets have really turned off UK equities, not just because of Brexit, as it was initially sort of explained. I think the markets see our companies as nowhere near as efficient or, you know, as innovative or, you know, not able to grow as much as especially American shares. And even European shares probably do better than the UK FTSE. Lots of companies have decided to list elsewhere. So I suppose this is the Chancellor trying to get more money in. But of course, any shares that you buy within an ISA, there's no capital gains tax on those shares and no income tax on the dividends that you receive. So not a lot of money, but, you know, it's there and you should utilize it. So SA is changing quite a lot. Serviced accommodation, Airbnb. They're abolishing the furnished holiday lettings regime. So you're not going to be able to claim capital allowances on serviced accommodation. I think this was always coming, but you know, that's quite a big deal. You used to be able to claim something like 20% of the purchase price of the property and then offset that against all of the income. But the issue is, the issue now is you're not going to be able to do that at all. In addition, I think there's going to be a registration and probably a licensing scheme like you have with a lot of normal properties that are on ASTs. And in addition to that, they're going to bring it within the remit of Section 24, which means if you own it in your own name, you're probably only going to be able to offset up to about half of the mortgage interest against the rent, which seems pretty unfair. It's draconian, but I think it was always likely to happen. There's been a huge gap between serviced accommodation units and normal sort of long-term rental units. And I suppose they're closing that gap. But it is more of the same, just red tape, tinkering. All it does is push up probably hotel room costs, SA costs. Some of these properties over the medium term will probably come back into the private rented sector, which does provide more, you know, for tenants. So it may control rents a bit. But yeah, and in addition, what they say they're going to do is require planning consent in a lot of areas. There's going to be a permitted development rights regime applied to this. So you will have permitted development rights in lots of areas to operate your flat or house that, you know, wasn't serviced accommodation previously. You're going to be able to do that without planning permission in lots of areas, but in some areas, and I suspect these will be the ones on the coast and the areas where there's lots and lots of holiday makers, they're going to stop you doing that unless you apply for planning consent. And then I guess they'll refuse the planning consent. So it is going to act as a control on these properties. People who've already got them, there's a big benefit there because they're going to be able to carry on. I suppose they'd have grandfather rights, you know, and they won't be subject to these planning issues. They will just have the use that they'd established prior to this change will just continue, and they won't have to apply for planning consent. They will be subject to Section 24, though. Won't be able to offset all the mortgage interest if it's in their own name. Fine if it's in a limited company. And I think they also are not going to be able to claim any unused capital allowances. I suspect that will come to an end. So, or they may be able to make retrospective claims. I'm unsure about that. But any new purchases, it will be finished. So other changes, this sort of non-dom status is changing, or they're abolishing it. I'm not sure this is going to make much difference at all. These are just people that, you know, where their fathers are domiciled, have their domicile somewhere else, i.e. they were usually born abroad, you know, and you're, you know, you've been based in this country up to a certain length of time. And really, it just relates to income, which has been obtained overseas. Historically, they've been able to keep their cash overseas, income overseas, and not pay UK income tax on it. But this will mean that their worldwide income, these people will be brought under the umbrella of sort of UK taxation, especially income tax. I don't think there's many of these people. I think there's a few of them in London. Often they're expatriates. So is it going to change that much? Probably not. It might push a few of them away. They may not want to stay anymore. London property, you know, London generally has suffered, you know, in the last few years. Brexit, various other things has pushed people away. I suspect this pushes some more money away and probably doesn't raise very much. It's just politically popular, which I'm not sure that's necessarily a reason to do it, but that's what the government seemed to like to do. So what else has been happening? Well, UK house prices, I think we can all accept that since Christmas there's been quite a big change. We were seeing quite big falls. I think the market probably has dropped 10 to 15% since peak. Peak was probably maybe 2022. Last year, definitely things were falling. I think since Christmas, the sentiment has moved quite a bit. I think now just seems to be bumbling along. I don't know that it's necessarily falling or rising. We're going to need a little bit more data. But certainly, whilst base rate hasn't moved, interest rate expectations have shifted downwards in quite a big way. Inflation is now at about 4%. We need to get to 2%. We were at 10%. So the expectation is that interest rates from the middle part of this year will start to drop. And that supports property prices. You know, they sort of grew by 1.7% according to the Halifax on an annual basis. I don't know if I really believe that. I think they're down 10, 15% over the last year. I think a lot of these numbers, Building Society numbers, Rightmove, I think they're averages. I think they're lagged. Some areas of the north of England are still rising. So this is an average of that as well. But lots of London now. I was talking to an agent who operates in Knightsbridge. He reckons they're back to 2012 prices. So, you know, pricing there back sort of 10, 12 years. Yes, it was very, very high, but lots of the Europeans left through Brexit. And some of the others have, you know, Russians and various other groups have left London. And it's, you know, they've probably been hit harder coming off a very high base than other areas of the country. Yeah, that's quite an interesting story. I think in terms of this year, what are we going to see happen to prices? I suspect they're going to stabilize, probably not that much change, I think, by the end of the year. But hopefully we start seeing, as rates come down next year, prices will start to rise again. I think rents are still going up. Little three beds, you know, 2004 when I started were 550. You went through to 2000 and all the way through to 2016, Brexit vote. That little three bed might have been 750. So yes, it'd gone up, but not even by the rate of inflation. Probably did go up by the rate of inflation. But, you know, you were still at about 550, I don't know, 2014. Since Section 24 has come along, since Brexit, since, you know, these attacks on landlords, that three bed is now worth £1,000 a month. And it's not, doesn't look like it's stopping. It's continuing. And all of the predictions are that rents are going to continue to rise this year. So well done, central government. You've done something that's popular, but what effectively you've done is put all the rents up. So the tenants end up paying the bill. What else has happened? Housing supply got worse, not better. This is Michael Gove talking about announcing measures to boost housing supply by unlocking planning restrictions on brownfield sites. Yes, he's going back to the 300,000 number, which they promised. I think David Cameron's government originally promised to build that many houses every year. Haven't got anywhere close. I think we've been lucky to touch 200,000 per annum. And this is more, I would say, tinkering around the edges. Yes, they're going to bring some sites forward for development. You know, maybe it will help, but, you know, removing housing targets from local councils as they did a few months ago not resourcing planning departments is certainly having a greater effect, I would say, on reducing housing supply. So I'm not sure any of that was particularly good. And then renters reform bill on the brink of collapse. Can't say that I'm disappointed to hear that. I think lots of the backbenchers have been putting pressure on Gove to think again and to amend the bill, which I think they probably should do. Look, landlords usually, ourselves included, only really use the Section 21 process because you're trying to evict a tenant because they're probably not paying their rent or they're really damaging the property or they're upsetting the neighbours. It's really those three things in the main. Yes, you could use a Section 8 for that, but it just tends to take quite a lot longer and the courts tend to throw out those applications for whatever reason, if they're not sort of perfect and you haven't got every I dotted and every T crossed. So yes, you move the Section 21, but you know, really you need to improve the provisions and the efficacy of the Section 8 in order not to reduce housing, you know, the private rented sector further, push rents up further, and reduce the number of landlords. I'm sure that's not what central government want. You talk to local councils who try very hard to house a lot of, local people who are in bed and breakfast. There's loads of asylum seekers. We've got Circle on the phone continually. None of this really helps that. It just doesn't seem particularly joined up. But again, it's popular. Yes, renters may vote for this, but in the medium to long run, I don't think it benefits them. It pushes rents up, reduces the choice and probably quality of housing supply. And in the end, I just think it flies in the face of basic economics, the supply and demand curve, which lots of these policies don't seem to appreciate. There are smart people in the Treasury. You know, the government gets advised on this sort of stuff. I think they must know, but they're just going down the sort of populist route. Apparently, Jacob Rees-Mogg is being accused of holding up and weakening the proposed reforms. Can't say I'm not in support of that. I think Jacob is a smart guy. I had a chat with him a few months ago when I was on GB News about converting offices into apartments, and I think he was having some problems doing that, as we do sometimes. I think he's generally pro free market, and he's generally pro getting more houses into the private rented sector, which actually helps tenants. Doesn't look like some of them in the cabinet want to support that. Okay, so the final story I've got here is a crackdown on long-term empty homes. Apparently, they're strengthening the 100% council tax premium on long-term empty homes. Now, currently, if a property has been empty for 2 years, this premium applies, but they're now saying that it's going to be applied if a property has been empty for 12 months. Now, in principle, I support bringing empty homes back into use, but there are lots of reasons why, people would have their property empty for more than 12 months. I mean, they may be applying for planning consent because they're doing some extension, or maybe they're looking to knock the house down and rebuild a new one. Things that are not really in the envelope of, a long-term empty home. You know, the property is awaiting redevelopment. I've applied for planning consents. Planning consent can easily take 2 years, and taking conditions off takes even longer when you add that in. So, I think lots of sort of developers and, somebody dies. I don't know if they're going to have that as a sort of fair exclusion. Probate can, I think my father's probate took a lot longer than 12 months. That seems pretty unfair to me. Obviously, we haven't seen all the detail. And at the moment, it's a consultation, and it depends what caveats there are in it. But I suspect this is just another way of raising more council tax. The cynical side of me says that has to be what it is. So that concludes our news roundup for today. I have been Mark Homer for Mark My Words.